In the end, there are three things that matter about a church: its past, its present, its future. The past matters because it's our story, and also because the past continues to shape a congregation, sometimes more than you might think. The present matters because it is our time, our responsibilities, our possibilities that define our experience as we take our turn in this congregation, holding what we inherit and creating our own legacy. And the future matters because we have a charge to pass on, the charge we inherited, to do our best in this time and place for those next generations who will one day sit in these pews and preach from this pulpit. And while that's all church life on a very large scale, the actual unfolding of all this past and present and future is actually totally personal. Individuals and families, activists and ponderers, joyful, lonely, stoic, wacky, courageous, careful, caring people. We are defined by our time, and we define our time. We are defined by this church, and we define this church. Philekklesia is a word derived from ancient Greek, from the verb philao, which is the Greek verb to love, and ekklesia, which is the Greek word for church. So philekklesia means love of church. I made it up for this sermon. I checked with a Google search to make sure. There is a very obscure British journal about the history of the British church that also uses the word, but they made it up too, and we don't know each other, so. I made it up because though it is not very hip to talk like this these days, we have a church worth believing in, worth our trust, worth our commitment, worth our treasure, our hopes, ourselves, here, together, worthy of our love. And I'm so glad we heard Megan earlier this morning talking about what this church has meant to her across her life, because her story of a life shaped by a church and returning to that church resonates with me. I was raised also Unitarian Universalist at the first Unitarian Universalist Society in Newton, Massachusetts, or as they like to call themselves, FUSN. My parents loved and still love that church, and they were pillars there for decades, decades that were filled with committees and efforts and celebrations and friends. My sister's family are members there again now. When my parents pass from this life, their ashes will be interred in funerary niches along a side wall of FUSN's beautiful sanctuary. There they will rest near some of their closest friends, a few of whom are already there. And it is fitting because FUSN centered so much of their time and their hope for the world and their belief in humankind and their living into the principle that we must do what we can for the world and for each other, and that we can do that best when we are ourselves in a community that multiplies our capacities and heightens our joys and shares our sorrows. And it was a center for me too. Even when I was very little, it was not just a center, it really was a sacred center. I was a child of the church. I had total access to all the graciousness and beauty and history in those spaces. My family loves history. My parents were both history teachers once upon a time, and we did not have much personal history around us because both sides of the family were immigrants who came with little or nothing to this country. But at church, a church I could explore everywhere, and I'm certain I could still find my way around blindfolded. The grave elegance of the Women's Alliance Room, and the worn elegance of the nearby ladies' bathroom, and the dark, impressive wood that's all around the parish hall, and most of all, the splendor of the sanctuary. Whenever I was at church in the daytime, I would walk into that dim, empty space, and the sunshine would stream through the so beautiful stained glass windows and just illuminate them most brilliantly then. And I would walk along the pews, and I would look at the windows and try to decipher all the scenes and characters they held. I would stand still and listen to the sanctuary breathing all around me. The sound of resting space, the sound of vaulted ceilings and angels on the columns, and the choirs who have sung, and the people who have sat and listened, and the ushers who have welcomed, and all the people who have entered and walked and talked and listened and thought and prayed and laughed and wept. I would run my fingers over the carvings of the baptistry with its tall steeple and the pulpit and the podium. And back then, I had no sense that I would ever be a minister. I really didn't. This was not about that kind of attachment. It wasn't about me learning I had a sense of calling, because I did not back then. It was about having a sense of belonging and a mutual belonging. I belonged to our family with our modest lifestyle and short history in this country, but I also belonged to this old church with its history and beauty and detail and its presence and mysteries and scale and surprises. They were all part of what I was part of and what I belonged to. And I was not aware of all this at the time. This is all unpacking and reflection that has been done much later. Long after my footsteps stopped echoing in the hallways and spaces there. But because my family and I belonged there, there also belonged to me. The bell tower belonged to all of us at Fusen, including me. I could ring the bells. God help the people of West Newton, I did ring the bells. I put my hands where so many other hands had been and sent my halting, hopeful song out to the city. And the church basement was my basement, including the unfinished and dark and cluttered spaces full of boxes that I could poke into. I found old glass plate images of the church and its life long before me. My church family ancestors. Out of my ordinary suburban existence, I could see and touch art in a way I couldn't anywhere else, and history and heritage that were never before accessible to me in my life. But with all the ways that the church buildings and spaces mattered to me, there was so much more that I got out of it. I was a girl who was shy, and I was bookish, and I was deeply uncertain of my way in the world, even of my value in the world. And what mattered most in my Unitarian Universalist upbringing is that I was told unfailingly and unstintingly at church that my value was great, and that there I could rely on kindness and love and laughter and the honoring of the questions I brought and the answers I found. Eventually, I was invited as a youth to teach others, where my creativity was possibly given its freest expression ever in the history of my life, when I taught a class on Bible stories to kids much younger than me in the religious education program. And then we painted a mural, with permission, on all four walls of one of the classrooms, illustrating the stories we loved best. Nowadays, when my role, part of my role, is to help steward our historic buildings, I do not know that I would ever feel able to grant that kind of permission, which I so enjoyed. But that is okay, because the truth is that it wasn't really about the freedom to paint a room. It was about the faith that my church had in me and the welcome the church offered me and my family from the first, and the support for living that the church guaranteed us, and the affirmation that said, yes, I too belonged. I had a place with grandeur and presence and history and vitality streaming through its spaces. All of that for me, little Liz Lerner, as much as for anyone else there. My decision many years later to become a minister in this faith was made in that same building, in the minister's office, in a meeting with the Reverend Jerry Crick, who will always be an exemplar of ministry to me in so many ways. And when I had exhausted all my earnings and all my savings and maxed out all my student loan options attending divinity school, Jerry brought me to meet with John and Ginny Taplin. They were members of the church whose names I knew, but had never met. And they gave me many thousands of dollars to help me stay in school and finish my ministry degree. It wasn't a loan. It was a gift. Always, the church and my faith taught me that I had value and gifts to give, and that I was worthy, and had a responsibility to find a way to manifest the gifts I had, whatever they were, in the world. The church, this church, still teaches those same things. So no wonder, Philecclesia, I love this church. Which brings me to that story about the trees for New College at Oxford. Now, this is a story that has been told and retold many times. Some of you may have heard it already. And when people checked in with New College's archivist, a woman named Jennifer Thorpe, she told them that the new Buckinghamshire Estates, which is the kind of names they have over there, the new Buckinghamshire Estates, where the trees were supposed to have come from, weren't actually acquired by the college until 1441. And that was 70 years after the hall was built. So it could not have happened the way the story says. In an article about this story in the English newspaper, The Guardian, it says the story is used as a pleasant illustration of the value of foresight. It is way more than that, for two reasons. First, did you notice the college was acquiring forest, okay, at least within 70 years of its building, working to provision itself for the kind of timber that would be required for its future, just not right when the hall was built, okay. But more important, that story as it stands is an inspiring example of vision and of commitment and of looking at human institutions and experience with an extraordinary eye, an eye that doesn't say, what do I need or want now? Or even, what will we need or want down the line? But what must endure? What must endure centuries from now? What matters the most of what we're doing now for what will be needed then? And what can we do? What can I do to make it so? What is that precious? What is that precious? And how does the arc of my life matter for what people will need and be sustained by, lifted by, centuries from now, when life will surely be beyond my imagining? And still people will need to be fed, body and mind. And this hall, this institution must be here, strong, relevant, exciting for those it can nurture. And that is the kind of eye that we bring, you bring, when we give to the church. In all the scale and scope of what we do here, it comes down to the people who are held and sometimes saved and sometimes lost and cherished and nurtured and mourned here. What I learned at church was a value that is fundamentally Unitarian Universalist and one we don't actually have a word for. It is essentially the summation of all our UU principles and purposes rolled up into one. And I was eventually taught this word many decades later in a different Unitarian Universalist setting, and the word is Ubuntu. Ubuntu is a Zulu and Bantu word from Southern Africa, and it is a misleadingly small word because it has a lot of concept to it. Ubuntu is a relational understanding. It means I am who I am because of who we all are. I am who I am because of who we all are. Archbishop Desmond Tutu defines Ubuntu this way: a person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming of others, does not feel threatened when others are able and good, for he or she has a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs in a greater whole and is diminished when others are humiliated or diminished, when others are tortured or oppressed. That's how he explains it. What Ubuntu expresses, what our purposes and principles add up to, what the church taught me, is this: you cannot be human all by yourself. So much in the world isolates us, whether by intent or effect. We have all known the pain of trying to be human. It feels like all by ourselves. Our faith, this church, stands against that, against all the ways that people fear each other and defend themselves against each other, and in so doing diminish and demean each other. This church works to push and keep doors open so that we can breathe, so that we can move, so that we can be ourselves and each other free. Free to attend and respect the truths and varieties of human identity and experience, to attend and respect each other. Because when we truly attend and respect each other, we are on the path of love. When we look to the lessons of our own lives and hearts, they begin to free us, and what they free us for, mind and heart together, is love. And there is literally no limit to what this church can do, can be, can mean. The only limits on us are the ones we impose on ourselves, sometimes without even realizing it. And we can push past any of those self-imposed limits. In fact, let me say, we should push past those limits, especially the ones that are so entrenched that we don't even see them for what they are. Our faith is not small, and this church is not small. And these times are full of opportunity and need for exactly the pluralism and respect and compassion that is at the heart of Unitarian Universalism. If we live into our times bold and glad and passionate and committed, then mighty good things are coming. We just sang, I love that hymn, Love Will Guide Us, which is also the theme of our commitment drive this year. But we sing that hymn as if it's going to guide us. Love will guide us sometime in the foreseeable future. But it already guides us. Love beats at the heart of this church, and it keeps us working for peace and nonviolence here. It moves us to give sanctuary to immigrants and refugees. It brings us to show up with food or rides when they're needed. It moves us to declare that, yes, Black Lives Matter. And we know that declaration means we ourselves have a lot to learn about how to bring about a just, multicultural, multiracial community. Love inspires us to teach Sunday school and to sit with each other when we are struggling or ill or even dying. Love was why this church worked so hard to push through marriage equality in this state and why our religion worked so hard for it in this nation. Love underlies how and why we offer food and respect here at our community food share pantry and when we cook and serve food to our homeless neighbors and friends as part of the Loaves and Fishes program. Love underlies our commitment to being a congregation that welcomes all who seek us, including and sometimes especially GLBTQA people and families. Love is in the attention and respect we offer each other in the deep sharing that we do in our Chalice Circle small group ministry program. And there is more, for sure, than just love in these things, but love is the common denominator in all of them. Love underlies our commitment to counter a world that diminishes people all the time. Love and community, which we create together, and which then further creates us and deepens us and refines us in the doing, which is Ubuntu. I am who I am because of who we all are. Having said so much about why church matters and why it is unique and inspiring and critically important always and especially now, and therefore worthy of your generosity, there is only one fundamental reality left to say, which is that church needs and costs money. There is no way around it. And in fact, this church should cost more than it does because we cut corners all we can. And that makes it really tough sometimes. But this is a reality of congregational life, and it is the reality of our congregational polity, which is that we ourselves are responsible in this church for bringing in all the money that we need to operate and making all the choices for what to do with it. There is no hierarchy to tell us what to do, and there is no hierarchy to help fund what we do. It is all on us. Our money makes possible our efforts, our supplies, our staff, our vision, our needs, our education, our care, our roof, our heating systems, our cleaning and maintenance of these buildings that shelter and uplift us. Money is an essential part, as essential as love. It is not the whole, but it is essential to what gives our faith form and strength. And we are at an important moment in the life of this congregation with a lot of gifts and a lot of opportunities and a lot of needs. And some needs have been starved of funding for a long time. We are not here to make a profit. Our commitment is to uphold our purposes and principles, open our hearts, care for each other, welcome strangers, make justice, hold our course even when keeping our hearts open or our commitments committed feels hard or painful. When justice seems elusive or impossible, we double down on Ubuntu every time it is challenged around us or within us, and that is precious. When so much of our struggle is to free ourselves of all those prisons of classification and judgment that falsely, evilly infect us and confine us and divide us and demean us. They demean us all, regardless of the particularities of our identity. They demean us all because Ubuntu. Against all that, we set community of being each other with each other through thick and thin, of claiming our neighbors as our friends and strangers as our friends, For us, this is sacred, and it is human, and it is just, and it is essential, and we will have it redefine our world. So that no matter what anyone is facing, we do not walk alone. Someone said in a meeting about Commitment Drive last week how much they hope that we will get to a place where we can blow the roof off and do things that are big and sexy. Needless to say, I loved it. Because that is my hope too. It was a longtime member who said that, but I couldn't agree more. And there's no time like the present. May we blow the roof off of this commitment drive. May all that is given to this church be bold and glad and grateful. May we claim our place in the present. The stronger and more vital this church is now, the stronger and vital it will also be years from now. And like mighty oaks, our faith and our love now will still be needed then. Thank you. Thank you for the faith that you prove and uphold, and for your presence in this church that shapes us all. Thank you for your generosity. Generosity which looks different and yet is real for each of us who gives whatever we are able. And some of us don't have a lot of means, and still we give. And I see it, and it is inspiring. And some of us who have more means are lifting our giving and answering the call. And that too is inspiring. Thank you for your commitment to our heritage and our renewal, for all that you give and for all that you are. Philekklesia, first you, Ubuntu. Amen.